Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
Jesus tells a story about a guy who has kind of a windfall, get all this stuff. He thinks his problem is he just doesn't have enough place to store it, so he builds up bigger barns.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
And that night he dies. God says, you fool. This night your life will be required if you know who's going to get all your stuff. And Jesus says, that's the way it is for anybody who stores up for things for themselves but is not rich toward God.
I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Sometimes you have to lose yourself before you find anything.
It really is not rocket science when you think about what does it mean to be rich toward God. It means to love Him with everything you got. Love Him with your whole mind. Get to know Him. Love Him with your heart. Love Him with your soul. Give Him your time. Seek to become the kind of person He wants you to be. Just love God because He is worth loving.
You've heard the expression, life is a game, and he who dies with the most toys wins. Well, is that really the case? Or why are so many Christians trying to find success in the game of life using the world's definition of those standards? On today's edition of the Homeward Broadcast, you're going to hear parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns have a conversation with the man you heard from at the start of our program, John Ortberg. We're going to be talking about finding success in the game of life. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. If you want to see for yourself what APU's undergraduate experience is like, visit apu.edu/blogs and read what real students have to say about the campus experience here. And now, with part one of today's program, here's Jim.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today is a very special day. One of my favorite communicators in the entire universe is with us. His name is John Ortberg. Anytime we could get him, we'd get him. We're going to talk about finding success in the game of life. This is for you. It's also for your kids, and you want to be thinking through that grid, if you would. But, you know, so many times as a parent or as a grandparent, we struggle with the issue of helping our kids find success when, in fact, we should probably be looking, you know, in the mirror at our own life. John, welcome to our program.
Jim, it's always a delight to be with you.
Well,
thank you very much.
Great to be with you. Teaching pastor at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church in Northern California, author of several of my favorite books. You and Nancy live there, of course, in Northern California. We get to pass each other. You were speaking at a MOPS convention, and I had it one day, and you had it the next, and so it's great to see you. Here, actually, we're at a conference called Rethink, which is here in Garden Grove, California. Some pretty incredible speakers.
We are, and at the MOPS convention, I spilled stuff all over my shirt about 5 minutes before I was supposed to go on stage. So that was kind of a memorable moment.
That is a memorable moment.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's like me taking some water and spilling it on my crotch once when I was speaking at a Wayne Watson concert, and that was one of the more embarrassing moments, but I got a good laugh out of it. And
I won't ask how you got the laugh, but thank you for the image.
I thought... If you have, it's true. Here on radio, you don't get to see it. But you know, when you have that and you go right before you're going on, you just have to say, let me tell you what happened. Yeah. I'm not sure they all believed it, but there we go. Yep. Well, we've got more important things to talk about than our silliness here. We're going to talk about finding success in the game of life. I was mentioning before the program to you that I took your book, When the Game is Over, It Goes Back in the Box, and I took it with me on a trip, and I loved it, and I appreciate so much your message, and your message resonates with me personally, spiritually, and that's why I'm so happy that our listeners can hear it too. And it's fascinating because you start your message in this particular book. We're learning different rules, and we're just going to wander through them, but you start talking about an experience that you had with a Monopoly game with your grandma. Mm-hmm. And I want you to teach us the first rule by talking about that Monopoly experience.
Well, I will. It's kind of an ancient metaphor. You're talking about games as a way of doing life. It was used in the Middle Ages around chess. And I remember James Dobson talked about playing Monopoly with his family one time. And that kind of reminded me, my grandmother lived with us when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And she was a wonderful woman. She's a great storyteller. Baked fabulous stuff. She used to make Friday nights, she would pop popcorn. She would fix bacon and then pop popcorn in the bacon grease and then put the bacon in the popcorn.
Wow, that sounds good. The kind of popcorn we're eating at the Burns home isn't that good.
Yeah, no, it was really good. You know, nobody lived to be real old in my grandma's family, but it was good stuff. But she was a very ruthless Monopoly player. When we would play Monopoly, you know, I would get my little stash of money and want to hang on to it, and she understood how to play the game. She would buy everything she landed on, mortgage that to the hilt, and eventually, inevitably, she would become the master of the board. I would land on a property once too often, have to give her my last dollar. Always would happen. And then one summer, I played almost every day with a kid that lived in our neighborhood, and I kind of learned that summer. It dawned on me, oh, this is how you play the game. Money's how you keep score. It's all about acquisition and possession, dog eat dog, every man for himself. So then that fall, the next time I played with my grandmother, I was like I played with sweaty palms. I was ready to do whatever I had to win, and I finally did. I finally destroyed my grandmother financially and psychologically. It's a wonderful moment. And then there was one final lesson, and that was, okay, now when the game is over, it all goes back in the box. All that property, all that wonderful money, Boardwalk, Park Place, everything. When the game is over, it all goes back in the box. And, of course, I didn't want it to go back in the box. I just wanted to leave the game out, you know, on a kind of permanent basis. But that was the great lesson. When the game is over, there's people who are really good at playing the game. It's not a bad thing to be really good at playing the game. Folks who are really good with money, really good acquiring stuff, and all of that can be used in good ways. But really, really smart people forget this one really basic truth. It's all going back in the box.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? You know, I was involved in a funeral recently of somebody when I was a youth pastor of a mom of one of the now kids who are probably 35. And I said, she was incredible. What was the deal? Well, she had an eternal perspective. She realized that she was going to live life in a short time here on earth, and then she was going to, well, her body was going to be in a box, but she would be resurrected.
Yep.
She had this eternal perspective, and that's really one of the main points that we have to look at if we want to live our life on purpose, and if we really want to find success in the game of life, is realize what goes on after.
It's exactly right. It's how do you live wisely in light of this one real basic truth, which is all the stuff's going back in the box.
Right.
So asking what lasts and what doesn't, what matters and what doesn't. But part of what makes it so hard is the stuff is so tangible. And the game is such an adrenaline rush, and it feels like it defines everybody in terms of being a winner and a loser. So it's very hard to pull back to the bigger picture.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's important for families to look at. I think it's also important to teach kids. We were having a garage sale not too long ago, and one of my daughters didn't want to sell, you know, a dress that she hadn't worn for, you know, several years.
Yep.
But for some reason, she wanted to hold on to it. And we kind of do that with life and stuff, and it doesn't free us up to really have an eternal perspective.
You know, where we live now in Menlo Park, kind of in the middle of Silicon Valley, and the wealth and the obsession with that world is so intense out there. A friend of mine and I were walking down the street in Menlo Park, and there was a kid and his mom. The kid was like maybe 5 years old, and there was a Jaguar sitting in the street, and he went to touch the Jaguar, and his mom pulled him back. And I thought she was going to say, no, you don't do that. What she said to him was, yes, it's just like daddy's. It's like, it's just a crazy world.
It really is. And yet one of your major principles, even at the beginning of your book, when the game is over, all goes back into the box, is you say that we have to be rich toward God.
Yeah.
And that's a different perspective than what a lot of people are saying. What do you mean by that?
Well, Jesus tells a story, which is really kind of the same story. What I love about the Monopoly thing is it's life and death stuff. But it gets past the defenses that we usually have, and then you can kind of get the scalpel in and do surgery. And Jesus tells a story about a guy who has kind of a windfall, get all this stuff. He thinks his problem is he just doesn't have enough place to store it. So he builds up bigger barns, and that night he dies. God says, you fool, this night your life will be required of you. Now, who's going to get all your stuff? And Jesus says, that's the way it is for anybody who stores up for things for themselves but is not rich toward God. And it really is not rocket science when you think about what does it mean to be rich toward God. It means to love God. Love Him with everything you got. Love Him with your whole mind. Get to know Him. Love Him with your heart. Love Him with your soul. Give Him your time. Seek to become the kind of person He wants you to be. Just love God because He is worth loving. And then love people. People are the other eternal objects that are all around us all the time. So when we're together, to see, to listen, and particularly with our children, those of us who are parents. And those, when our kids were small, people would sometimes say, especially to my wife, treasure these days because they go by so fast. And Nance wanted to kill them when they said that because we had 3 kids, 4 and under at one point, and days felt like, you know, they went on forever. Then somebody said, the days go slow, but the years go fast.
Mm, great line.
Yeah. And now, this fall, our nest emptied out, and they're all off, and you really do recognize, man, every day, it just is such a gift, and it goes by so fast. And the art of learning to treasure it and spend it wisely is the whole ballgame.
It really is about, in many ways, priorities, because we get so busy doing stuff that we think would be important. But then when you look back, you say, boy, that was a kind of a waste of time when in fact, the eternal perspective, you were, in many ways, you were quoting the Jesus Creed. When Jesus was asked, what's the most important commandment? He said, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, mind, body, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Yep.
And really, that's the priority. But so many times we get so busy doing other things. And one of the things that you say is we, and you're, again, we're talking about the Monopoly game kind of as a game of life too, but you know, you say there's three ways to keep score: comparing, competing, and climbing.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, when you think about it, for all of us, but even for our kids, early on when they go to school, there's a guy named Guy Dowdy used to talk about in every school, there's a formal curriculum, but then there's the hidden curriculum. The hidden curriculum is issues like who wants to sit next to who and who gets called on when they raise their hand. And in the hidden curriculum, we all get taught about who matters and who doesn't. And the way the system of the world works, and it starts really early for children, is oriented around those kind of dynamics. So I look at you and I think, I have to do better than Jim. We talk about keeping up with the Joneses. Or I will define myself in terms of how am I doing next to you. And even in families, we start to label our kids as, this is the athletic one. When the reality is, you know, the fact that I have a sibling who is more or less coordinated than I am really has nothing to do with my identity. But we learn to define ourselves in comparison. And then, you know, we all are tempted by ladders. We all are climbers. And that idea of I got to climb up above you. All of those dynamics are so deeply woven into our society that we will capitulate to them without even being aware of it.
Mm-hmm. We sure do that. Teaching pastor, Menlo Park Presbyterian Church, John Ortberg, again, as I've said, one of my favorite communicators. What a privilege to have him with us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the game of life, the two parts, the outer game and the inner game, and just how we can master the inner game, which is so much more important than the outer game. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Burns. You're listening to Homeward.
Great analogy today here on the Homeward broadcast as you think about board games and so many people like to play them. John Ortberg talking about his love for Monopoly, the board game that's got so many different incarnations of it, and how we as believers can look at the game of life a bit differently than trying to just win a bunch of property and get all the right tokens in all the right places. Today on the Homeward broadcast, we're talking about finding success in the game of life. If you'd like additional resources on this topic, visit our online resource center at homeward.com. Go to the articles and media section, and you can get some perspective. Thousands of different articles, tip sheets, video clips, and more available to you without cost when you go to homeward.com.
I'm Jim Burns with today's Homeward Snapshot. Heather?
What?
Heather, can you turn that down? Thank you.
What's up?
Well, Heather, there's something I want to tell you.
Okay.
But you see, actually, look, the thing is, well...
Well, what, Dad?
Don't take that tone of voice with me.
Here we go.
Where is this attitude coming from, Heather?
Parents, for those moments when the right words are hard to come by, here are a couple of phrases you need to memorize, and then you can start using them with your kids even today. Try, I love you. Or how about, I need you? That's one that'll surprise them. Well, your words have a tremendous influence on the lives of your kids. So always remember that positive words bless and build up. Well, get started today by reading my free tip sheet called Confession is Good for the Soul and the Family. You can download a free copy from our website at homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. You know, the key to living passionately and boldly is to consider your priorities and then arrange them in your life for the eternal perspective in mind. And that's what we're talking about today, finding success in the game of life. One of my favorite communicators in the world. What a privilege I get here at Homeward to just get to sit across people like John Ortberg, teaching pastor at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church, communicator extraordinaire, has written great books. He and his wife, Nancy, live in Northern California. John, right before the break, I mentioned something, and it just really struck me. It was in your book, When the Game is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box, and we kind of were talking about how that happens in Monopoly, but you kind of say there's an outer game and an inner game, but we've got to master the inner game. Mm-hmm. That's not as comfortable as mastering the outer game, it seems like.
You know, another game I played a lot when I was growing up was tennis. And there was a book, a big book back in the 70s called The Inner Game of Tennis.
Yeah, I read that book.
Well, the kind of the thesis of it was there's the outer game, forehands, backhands, what you're doing with the ball and so. But then there's an inner game, and that has to do with what you're saying to yourself all the time. Do you get frustrated? Do you give up? Do you, you know, do you cheat on calls? There's an inner game, and that's the one that really matters. And what's interesting about the outer game actually is that it puts us into the reality of the inner game. And I was thinking about that and thinking about Paul saying, outwardly we're wasting away. And we are wasting away, and it, you know, it's happening faster and faster all the time. I'll look at my hands sometime and think, my gosh, I have my dad's hands. Yeah. But then he says, inwardly we're being renewed day by day. And so that focus on, you know, for Paul, he could be in prison, he could have all kinds of horrible things going on, and yet it's the strangest thing. Internally, I find myself becoming more loving and more joyful and more alive. I'm actually being renewed by God. And when we think about, like our kids, what do I want for them? I'd like them to do good work. I'd like them to be, you know, financially healthy and all that sort of stuff. But it's really the inner game. It's the inner them. It's to have a character that's well-formed and to be loving and joyful. That's the game that matters.
Boy, that makes so much sense. You know, as you're saying that, I'm saying, that's what I want for my children.
Yeah.
But yet so often, I'm not willing, and it's another process, and I want you to explain, I'm not willing to sometimes untie the ropes. There's so many other things that are going on, and you had a great story, actually, about, you know, needing some ropes to be untied before you took off on a little trip. Talk about that.
Well, a friend of mine took me out flying with him, and I'm like the least mechanical guy in the world, and he's a really, really bright guy. So we went to this airport, this is this little plane, and he's going through, he's just learning how to fly. So he's going through a whole book checklist of all the stuff, talking to the guys in the tower. Meanwhile, the wings of the plane are actually tied to these little mechanical clamps in the ground. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to insult him by pointing out that the plane is tied to the ground. but it'll be interesting to see what happens. Are they like slip knots, or do the clamps just disappear? Or, you know, what's the deal with this? So, you know, we're all set to take off. And then he looks around us and his eyes get real big. He says, oh my gosh, we're still tied to the ground. Hops out of the plane to untie the ropes. Like, get me out of here. Right. But it struck me when I was thinking about that all of us have these ropes that keep us from flying. We were made to fly. We were made to soar with God. But the ropes may have to do with fear. They may have to do with addictions. They may have to do with a sense of inadequacy. They may have to do with misguided beliefs. Yeah. And I have them, you have them, and our kids have them. And to help them identify, because one of the things about ropes is it's always easier to see them in other people than it is to see my own ropes. Right. So I need people who can help me to identify my ropes, but then I need to be doing that with the people that I love, and especially with our kids. And I bet every parent that's listening to us, if you were to ask, just walk through each of your children's lives and their inner lives, what are the ropes that could keep them from just soaring through their life with God? We'd all be able to name them for our kids.
You just mentioned a list that basically is a list of almost everybody. I mean, we all have our ropes. And they say, okay, I want to release some of these ropes.
Yeah.
You mentioned almost community. Can you do that without community? I mean, you need people to help you think through this.
No, you absolutely can't. We all have blind spots that are way, way, way too big. So I simply, I can't see it. But even if I do, it's funny. I was talking to a guy recently, and the priorities thing is his issue. He works way too much. And his comment around that was, you know, I'm doing it all for them. Well, he's not doing it all for them. If he didn't have a family, he'd still be doing it. But you can tell in his mind, it's like tires running in a rut. His thoughts will start to go into that rut. And if there's not someone else to identify them and challenge them and help lift them into another direction, his mind will always spiral in that direction.
Yeah.
And our ropes are that way. If we don't have somebody else to help us think another way, our minds just get stuck.
No. You know, I had an experience once with actually a mutual friend of ours where we kind of do life together. And I said, let's talk about blind spots. I said, I want you to think about it for a minute, and I want you to give me some of my blind spots. And it was funny because I thought he would give me the things that I knew were, you know, negative about me. And he said, you know, it could be low self-esteem. And I went, low self-esteem? And the more I thought about it, because I asked a friend to speak into my life, at first I was defensive about it.
Yeah, sure.
But then I realized,
I love me. I think I'm fabulous.
I think I'm great. Yeah. But as he started to talk about it, he wasn't preaching at me. He wasn't lecturing at me. And then he kind of gave an illustration. I went, my goodness. And it took me all the way back. You were talking about your dad's hands.
Yep.
I was thinking about, you know, as a kid, some of the issues that I dealt with that, you know, now I'm just a grown up, but I deal with some of those same issues. But through the process of talking it out with somebody and actually opening up your life and your heart, you really can release some of those ropes. maybe you mentioned the word addiction earlier. We all need to work a plan in our life. And in many ways, what we're talking about today is kind of working a plan. Yeah. Instead of just the typical American family, anyway, is so busy doing their stuff that they are work, work, work. And then, you know, at night, they just sort of fall into bed, exhausted, 6 inches apart if they're married, and not really connected too many times.
Yep. And it comes back to the whole kind of priority big picture. When you and you mentioned earlier in the program about being at a funeral.
Yeah.
And, you know, that actually used to be an exercise for folks on a regular basis in their spiritual life, was they would just contemplate, when I die, imagine that moment, and how do I look back on my life in light of that day?
Right.
And it's a great exercise and a really good one for families to do every once in a while.
You know, it really is. It sounds like a morbid thing, but it actually isn't, because it helps you get your priorities straight. But it also helps, the way we get our priorities straight is when we look into the future and look at that eternity. And, you know, it's the message that we're talking about today. At the same time, there is this idea of needing to release our life to God. And you talk about resigning as master of the board.
Yeah.
And that's a tough thing to do. Easier said than done.
You know, the old language for that is surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's good language still, though.
It is. Past centuries, folks would talk about detachment, which always seemed like kind of an odd word. It's like, so am I just supposed to be like this kind of monk who doesn't care about anything? And it's not that we're to not care about stuff. It's that I'm to seek to not have emotional attachments that would cause me to betray my deepest values.
That's good. That's a big one. Thank you for being with us. Great, great input.
And that concludes part one of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with John Ortberg here on the Homeward Broadcast, a great conversation about values, not just dollars and cents, but about values in general, talking about finding success in the game of life. And these are principles that John includes in his book, When the Game is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box. And Jim, when I think about a game like Monopoly, for example, I remember how much money we used to accumulate or try to accumulate and try to win the game. Money, sometimes to kids, is a game, but it's something that we as parents can teach them how serious the stewardship issue is. We have a new resource to share with parents to help them do just that.
Well, you're right, Roger. I'm very excited about them. I know a lot of families have really been impacted by the challenges in this particular economy.
Yeah.
And you know what? I believe that these changes can lead to a lot of what I would call teachable moments for our kids, for our grandkids, and even for our own lives regarding stewardship and just how important it is. Stewardship is more than just an issue of how you spend your money. It involves how you invest your time, how you care for the most important relationships in your life as well. And that starts with our relationship with God.
Amen.
But it's so key to so many things about our life. And Homeward has created a brand new set of tip sheets. I'm very excited about it. The tip sheets are about money and stewardship, and they're based on a series of well-known Bible stories that should be fairly easy for your kids to understand. But they also include some very practical tips for your whole family. You can start looking at these issues like giving and saving and even investing from more of an eternal perspective. Great new tip sheets.
They are indeed, Jim, and we are so grateful to our friends at Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment trust company. They understand the financial markets. They understand how this works, but also Rod Emery and the crowd there at Steadfast are godly people who I have a passion for helping parents help kids understand the basics of what you were just talking about, spending and saving and giving and investing. And so that's why they've created these tip sheets for us, and they're absolutely free. You go to homeward.com, hit the articles and media button, and then the Get Answers box comes up, and you type in Steadfast, Steadfast. It'll take you right to both of the tip sheets. You can read them, you can forward them, you can download them, print them out. Use these tip sheets as conversation starters with your kids, and actually with your spouse, if that is your story, to have a more healthy, honest dialogue about God's plan for biblical stewardship. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.